lives. Jonathan did a phenomenal job of defining responsibility for us. And it's simply this, just doing what you know you should do. He goes back to Genesis and he talks about the fact that in the beginning, when God created humankind, he had an idea that we would be responsible, that we would take things seriously, that we would do our jobs as people, that Adam and Eve in the garden, they had a responsibility to take care of the garden. And when we have our responsibilities and we're doing them, we're most satisfied in that. And I know we look back in our lives and we thought to ourselves, you know what? Maybe that's true. Maybe when I'm being the husband I'm supposed to be, I am most satisfied. Or the wife, or the mother. When I'm actually paying my bills on time, I feel good about myself. I feel phenomenal. And we talked about that for a while that first week, and we came to the conclusion that responsibility for us is a very, very good thing. However, just like in Adam and Eve's case, where they dropped the ball with responsibility, where they didn't exactly stay the course, where they turned to irresponsibility, we realize in our life there are consequences for our irresponsibility too. That when we do the things we know we shouldn't do, or we don't do the things we know we should do, we end up hurting ourselves and others around us. And we came to the conclusion that, listen, at the end of the day, we have to own up to what we do in life. We can't shirk responsibilities. We can't blame others. We can't criticize this, that, and the other over who we are and why we're in the positions we're in. That at the end of the day, we must begin to take responsibility for our life. And then last week, Jonathan did a phenomenal job also of describing the fact that in our lives, we have opportunities to do some things that are responsible. And that for many of us, a lot of times we come across to our friends and our family members as if we're doing things the right way. But reality is, a lot of times, if we're honest, we're not really looking in the mirror. We're playing games. Adam and Eve tried to play games in the garden. They tried to blame. They tried to figure out a way to cover up their mistakes. They tried to figure a way to mask all the irresponsible things they were doing. And instead of doing the right things, instead of taking responsibility for their life, they were looking for something else to make them satisfied in their irresponsibility. Jonathan said that we played a comparison game in our lives. That we do it in two ways. On the one hand, we are envious of others sometimes when we look at others that have more than we do or are better financially off than we are or in a better relationship with their husband or their wife than we are or they actually have a husband or a wife or they're a good student or they take care of their finances. We're like, man, I wish I was there and I'm not there. Therefore, I can't be responsible for where I am right now. And we also looked at the fact that there are many of us that sit in the room that are in good spots. We're in really good positions. And we took the attitude, and sometimes we take the attitude of the Pharisees from the Gospels, that they had all the look of being in charge, of being on top, and being, you know, in control of their lives. But deep down, they began to provoke those that didn't have enough. They began to make the excuse of, well, at least I'm not as bad as they are. At least I pay my bills on time. At least I have friends. And when it comes down to irresponsibility, when it comes down to responsibility, we realize that the comparison game with God just doesn't work. That God doesn't play games. As it says in Galatians 6:7, God can't be mocked. So we've looked at this in our lives. We've looked over the last couple of weeks, I hope, at our hearts and thought to ourselves, where am I taking responsibility for my life? Am I taking responsibility for my life, really? Am I really doing the things that I know I should be doing? And if you guys are, that's awesome. And if you're that guy in the crowd, that gal in the crowd, if you're sitting there today and you're wondering, well, I am taking responsibility for my life. These last 2 weeks, heck, these last month and a half, 2 months, I've really been doing what I think God has been leading me to do. I've been humble before the Lord. I've been working my tail off. I've been doing all the responsible things that I need to be doing. And yet I still find myself struggling in my daily life. You see, guys, the last couple of weeks, we've been looking at me. We've been looking at you. What we're going to do today, just for today, for the next 30 minutes or so, is we're going to take the focus off of me and you, and we're going to put it on the other people around us. Those, you know, that struggle with irresponsibility. Those that, while you're doing the right thing, while you're trying to make your way in the world with God, while you're trying to carve a new path and get off old paths, while you're trying to do the things you know you should be doing, while you're doing your best to be the husband or the wife or the son or the friend you're supposed to be, Yet you have in your circle of influence, in your sphere of friends and family members, you have that one guy that just can't get it together. And it's causing you tremendous headache. And it's causing you to pull your hair out. You can't sleep at night. You just don't know what to do. You wrestle with the fact that, hey, I'm around them all the time, or I want to be around them all the time, but while I'm trying to do the right thing, they tend to not be doing the right thing. Where I'm trying to go in this direction, they seem to be off over here in left field doing something that is completely unlike what I'd like to do. And for many of us, and I think we've all been there, when we try to do the right thing, when we try to go in the direction that God would have us go, and we have someone around us in our sphere, could be a family member, could be our husbands for crying out loud, that just don't seem to care, we have to probably be asking this one question. God, while I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, while I'm trying to figure this stuff out in my life, while I'm trying to walk in responsibility with you, what do I do about their irresponsibility? How do I handle their mistakes in life? How do I handle the fact that they don't seem to be checking in, connecting, clicking on any cylinder whatsoever? How, God, do I do what I'm supposed to do for them? Because you see, guys, here's the thing. And we all know this to be true. Irresponsibility is not something that just kind of hangs out in our own laps. Irresponsibility is the thing that kind of just kind of, it kind of starts in one person's lap, but then kind of just pours over into someone else's and then into someone else's. It kind of just gets messy and dirty. It's a thing that kind of just spreads around all over the place. We've seen it in our culture. We've seen it in our neighborhoods. We've seen it in our communities. We've seen it in the media. We've seen it in our government, where irresponsibility just doesn't happen where we sit. And the question that I know you guys have been asking for the last couple of weeks is, okay, so if I take responsibility for my life, how am I supposed to deal with the person next to me who's not? What am I supposed to say to them? How am I supposed to treat them? What do I even do? You guys with me? Because I feel like for many of us, we've been trying for a long time, some of us, to keep doing the right thing, to keep going where God's going. And yet we have someone on the sidelines or right in the forefront, could be a son or a daughter, who is just continuing to not do the things we know they should do, or continue to do the things we know they shouldn't do. And we're at our wit's end. What do we do? The cool part is, about every Sunday here at River City, is that we find answers to these kind of questions in the Bible. And what I want us to do for the next few minutes is look at the book of Joshua, because Joshua had a similar situation happen to him. Joshua had this issue with one of his people. He had this issue with one of the guys in his little circle of influence. And I think the answer to his question will be an answer to our question. So if you guys have your Bibles, turn to Joshua 7 with me. And to give you some background about Joshua, the cool part about Joshua is that he was number two in this movement of Israel from Egypt all the way to the Promised Land. He was Moses' right-hand guy. Can you imagine being Moses' number two? Moses, number two. Like, you were the guy that was going to take over. Like, when Moses was waving from the mountaintop, hey, can't go in the Promised Land, y'all have fun. Joshua was the guy that led the people into Israel. Joshua was the guy that led these people into Israel. God had his back. God was at his front. Him and God were so tight, it was insane. He was doing all these things from a military standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, that was very, very, very good in line with God. It was phenomenal. And Joshua was given the responsibility of eradicating evil cultures in the land of Canaan. Can you imagine having that job? If you were told by God, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go into this foreign land. Foreign land? Yes, foreign land. This land that I promised your forefather Abraham hundreds of years ago that would eventually be yours. I want you to go in there and I want you to wipe out these cultures. Not just the people, the culture, the lifestyle. Because what had happened over the period between the time that Abraham was promised the land and the time Joshua comes on the scene, all these nations had been gathering, all these tribes had been gathering in this land of Canaan, this eventual Israel, and they were doing some ungodly things. They were sacrificing kids. They were destroying the lives of women and children. They were making slaves and doing all these ungodly, just deplorable, inhumane things for centuries. And God had had it. He was done with it. So what does he get his people to do? He gets his people to be a little bit of the culture cleanup crew. To go in, to wipe these people out, and to establish a nation that's going to be a beacon, a light for the world to say, listen, God's here. God's present in his world, in his universe. And he has us an opportunity to meet with him, to work with him, to love him, to appreciate him, and to live like he would have us live. That was the whole point of Joshua pulling these people into this land, going into these different areas and wiping them out. It wasn't just for fun. It was to eradicate cultural problems that were going to eventually affect the entire world. God said, no. I love my people, my creation, too much to let that happen. So Joshua picks up in chapter 6, and we'll get into 7 in a second. Joshua, if you guys remember this or not, sent some spies into Jericho. And he gets word back, and there's a big, huge city. It's a big, huge walls. And they do their trumpet. They walk around 7 times, and poof, what happens? The walls fall down. They go into the city, and they take Jericho. Hooray! Everything was great. Everything was phenomenal. Everything was good for the people of Israel up until the point we get into our story. And in Joshua 7, verse 2, we pick up where Joshua does the customary thing. He sends some spies into the next land. They had just taken Jericho. They had just knocked out this group of people. And they were going on to the next group. They were cleaning up the next group. And this is where we pick up in chapter 7, verse 2. It says, Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Bethaven, east of Bethel, and said to them, go up and spy out the land. And the men went up and spied out Ai. And then they returned to Joshua and said to him, don't have all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and attack Ai. Do not make the whole people toil up there, for they are few. So Joshua's getting information back from his spies, basically saying, listen, we just knocked out Jericho. These guys are so small, you don't even have to pack a lunch. This is going to be an easy thing. This is going to be a cakewalk. This is going to be a walk in the park. This is going to be the other easy analogy I could use. This is going to be a no-brainer. We're going to go in, we're going to knock these guys out, and we're going to move right along. It's what we're going to do. But we read on, because something happens. Verse 4. So about 3,000 men went up from there, and they fled. Excuse me? They fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai killed about 36 of their men and chased them before the gate as far as Sherebim. Y'all remember where that is, right? Me neither, but the people in the story do. And struck them at the descent. You guys know where the descent is? The people in the story do. And the hearts of the people melted and became as water. So wait a minute. So God just gave these people Jericho. These Israelites just go into Jericho, a city that could not fall, a city that could not tumble, a city that could not be knocked down because of the super ridiculously high walls. And they go to Ai, which is like, from a state's standpoint, like Rhode Island. And they're like Texas. And they go over to Rhode Island and they can't do anything. They get pushed back. They get defeated against this little, weak, insignificant little town that doesn't have anybody in it. What's going on? Why did that happen? What had they done wrong? Where did Joshua mess up? What had been going on this whole time? Was God out to get them? Was God out to hurt them? Was God out to cause them more trouble, even though they were trying to do good things? I mean, don't we find ourselves in those spots sometimes? We're trying to do the right thing, and yet we still get slammed with some sort of tragedy in our life, slammed with some sort of irresponsible thing that happens with somebody close to us, and we have to suffer the consequences. I mean, Joshua, at this point, the people of Israel, at this point, had pretty much, according to them, that they thought was doing all the things they were supposed to do. And yet they go to Ai, and they get smoked. But see, Joshua does what any God-fearing, God-loving person does. He prays. When trouble strikes Joshua, like when trouble strikes us, when we're trying to be responsible in our life, we immediately go to God. We immediately run to him and say, God, whoa, 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 what's going on? And this is what Joshua says to God. This is the attitude Joshua takes as it relates to Joshua's predicament here now. Being the leader of Israel in this land, trying to do this thing as responsibly as he can. And he's wondering, why in the world has it happened like this? This is what he says. This is what he does. Verse 6. Joshua tore his clothes. He fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening. He and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. This is all ceremonial stuff. This is all we're brokenhearted. Like, this is not going right. Like, God, where are you type stuff. This is stuff that we just don't do much anymore unless you feel so inclined. And Joshua said to God, alas, O Lord God, why have you brought this people over the Jordan at all? Like, why have you taken us out of Egypt to begin with? We were doing fine in the wilderness. Why'd you bring us across the Jordan? To give us into the hands of the Amorites? To destroy us? Would that we had been content to dwell beyond the Jordan? Like, God, why are you doing this to us? We haven't done anything wrong. We haven't hurt anybody. We haven't caused any problems. I'm pretty sure I'm looking myself in the mirror daily and trying to clear up my own heart before you, God, because I want to be responsible for you, God, because I want to be that guy for you, God. So where has this thing gone wrong? Why is it tough for me now? I mean, guys, who prays that in here? We all do at some point, right? He goes on. Oh, Lord, what can I say when Israel has turned their backs before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it and will surround us and cut off your name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name? Like, God, what is going on here? Like, why have you allowed us, the people of Israel, to suffer this loss? Why have you made it so difficult for us to be prosperous? Why have you made it so hard for us, even though we're trying to do the right thing, to make it a step further in this progressive thing, in this movement that you have us on? Guys, how often do we say that to God? God, I'm doing all the things that I can in my life to be who you want me to be. And yet I still find those that I'm close to, those around me, just struggling to get it together. And it's kind of pouring onto me. It's kind of leaking into my business. It's kind of making it messy and dirty for me. God, why is that going on? God, why don't you help out? Why don't you step in? Why don't you fix them? Why don't you help me help them? What are you doing? Why are you making it so difficult for their relationship? Why are you making it so difficult for their finances? I know they're terrible with money, but God, why don't you just give them some sort of windfall to where they don't have to worry about those kind of things? Why don't they have to make those kind of decisions? God, can't you just make it easier? Can't you just show up? See, this is what Joshua was kind of praying at this point. Like, God, why would you allow this to happen? What's going on? I've got 3 million people counting on me. How can you let us look bad? How can you let us look awful in front of the lands we're supposed to be taking over? How can you not let us be this mighty nation that's just going to bowl over everybody and take things by storm? How can you let this be? This is what God says to Joshua. This is the part of the message where we really, really need to pay attention. Verse 10. The Lord said to Joshua, get up. He screams at him, get up. Why have you fallen on your face? Israel has sinned. Excuse me? They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen and lied and put them among their own belongings. Excuse me? Therefore, the people of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies because they have become devoted for destruction. Joshua's like, excuse me? I will be with you no more, God says, unless you destroy the devoted things from among you. He repeats himself in verse 13. Get up, consecrate the people, and say, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow. For thus says the Lord God of Israel. And he quotes again. There are devoted things in your midst, O Israel. You cannot stand before your enemies until you take away the devoted things from among you. Devoted things. Destruction. What is God talking about? Well, unbeknownst to Joshua, there was a man in his camp, a man in his army named Achan. And Achan was from the tribe of Judah, the same tribe that Jesus actually was the lineage of. And Achan, when they went into Jericho, Achan stole some things. He took some gold, he took some silver, and he went to his tent and he hid it and buried it underneath his tent. Good hiding spot, especially among 3 million people. But God had told them prior to going into these lands that they were going to take, that when they go into the lands, they are to leave everything in the lands. When they go and eradicate these cultures, when they clean up the cultures that they're going through, they're supposed to leave everything, take nothing. Don't take any livestock, don't take a tent, don't take a pole, don't take a person, don't take slaves, don't take the kids, don't take the animals. Leave everything. Everything. And Achan didn't do that. God knew Achan didn't do that. Joshua didn't know that Achan didn't do that. But when Joshua was told what Achan did, when Joshua was told that someone within their midst had stolen something, had taken some devoted things that were supposed to be left, when sin had entered the camp of the people of God, it was Joshua's job to get up and do something about it, to get up and say something to that person, to find the devoted things and get them out of the camp, to get them out away from the people of God. So the rest of the story goes like this. Joshua brings all the tribes together and he starts going through them people by people. Can you imagine? There's 3 million of them. He starts dissecting them by tribes, by groups, by clans, by families. And he finally gets to Achan, this guy who just lost his mind for a second and stole something out of the place of Jericho. And Joshua says, Achan, what did you do? And Achan said, I've sinned. I broke God's commandment. I broke God's law. And Joshua took the devoted things and he destroyed them. And he severely punished Achan. And you guys can read the rest of the chapter and figure out exactly what happened to Achan as a result of his irresponsibility. You see, guys, what I noticed in this story, and I hope you guys caught this too, is that God didn't just tell Joshua to ignore the sin that was going on, the irresponsibility that was happening in the midst of the people of God. God didn't say ignore it. God didn't say brush it off. God didn't say, you know what? Let's just let it go. God said do something. God didn't say excuse Achan. Oh, you know what? Don't worry about him. He had a rough home life. His parents struggled, you know, they had a tough time making ends meet in slavery back in Egypt. It was really rough for them. So you have to kind of give him a pass. He needed those goods. He needed that stuff, that gold and the silver that he hid in his tent. I mean, he's a good hider. He needed those things. No, God didn't make excuses for Achan. And it's quite ironic that when Joshua was praying for Achan, God didn't say, Joshua, just keep praying, buddy. Keep praying. Just pray on. If you pray long enough, that stuff will miraculously just like pop out from underneath Achan's tent. That silver and those gold pieces and that little bag will just miraculously float out of the people of Israel and be gone. God didn't say that, did he? God told him to get up. Get the dirt off your face. Make yourself presentable and go find the problem and fix it. Go find the problem, the issue, the devoted things, and get them out of there. So if I'm reading this right, maybe God's telling us, those who are really striving as we look in the mirror daily to be responsible for our lives, maybe God's telling us to, hey, that guy that's really close to you, that girl, maybe your wife, maybe your sister, maybe your mom or your dad or your coworker whom you love like crazy, maybe instead of just praying for them excusing them and ignoring them, maybe you should just go say something to them. Maybe you should give them some advice, some intervention, some sort of a little nudge in the direction saying, listen, I've been there. I know what you're talking about. I know what you're doing, you're going through. I've been down this road before, and it doesn't lead toward good things. It leads toward destruction. It leads toward despair. It's not where you want to be. But guys, here's the pushback that we have in our lives. All of us. Two things. Internally, many of us, when we know we should say something to someone who is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, we don't know what to say. We sure as fire don't know how to say it. So for many of us, what we do, we just don't say anything. We don't want to step on toes. We don't want to come off as judgmental or arrogant. We don't want to be like that guy that just looks around at other people and be like, oh, you got problems, and you got problems, and you've got problems. We don't want to be that guy. So what do? We do nothing. And irresponsibility grows. And irresponsibility gets more and more massive, more and more heavy. And it begins to bump into us harder and harder. It becomes more and more unbearable. And we become more and more just kind of like just discontented with the whole God thing at some point. Because eventually we're like, God, why aren't you showing up? And God's like, why aren't you speaking up? And then we also sometimes, our second thing that we battle with is how we've been raised. Growing up. It's interesting that many of us have been told since we were little kids to mind our own business. Mind your own business. Quit putting your nose in someone else's business. Oh, you can't get over there in their business. Oh, leave them alone. You don't want to say anything to that guy. Heavens. So what do? We listen to what the culture says. The culture says live and let live. Our upbringing says just mind your own business. Our internal struggles say, listen, you're not going to come off correctly. You're going to stumble and fumble through your words, so you might as well not even say anything. But the reality is, and we all know this to be true, we see the irresponsibility in other people's lives so much better than we do our own. Shouldn't we, us who are responsible, have the courage and the confidence to say something? But how? Right? That's your next question. That's the next question that just popped into my head. How do we do that? Well, we do it like we learned last week. In Galatians 6:1, Paul gives us a way to approach people, to say the right thing in the right way with the right heart to the right person. And what's incredible about Galatians 6:1, as we see it here on the screen, is that if anyone is caught in a trespass, a transgression, a sin, an irresponsible moment, you who are responsible or spiritual, you who are taking things seriously in your life, who are going through a routine with God that is alive, that's just powerful and magnetic, you are doing the things you're supposed to be doing. You who are spiritual should try to restore that person you're thinking about right now, with a spirit of gentleness. And you've got to keep looking in the mirror. You've got to keep watching yourself. You've got to stay humble. You've got to stay low, lest you too be tempted. See, guys, this isn't very difficult, but it can be one of the hardest things we can do. This isn't very difficult to know that, hey, we see someone struggling. We see someone not doing what they're supposed to be doing as a husband or a wife, not be doing as a mother or a son, not be doing as a friend or a coworker. We see all these things and we're like, I know I should say something, but what do I say? How do I say it? I mean, all our contexts are different. But to give you kind of an idea of what you could possibly say, it's simply this. Hey, listen, I've been where you've been, perhaps. I've sat in the same seat you're sitting in. I've struggled with the same things you struggled with. God got my attention. Someone came alongside me and said, hey, listen, You're struggling with this, I know. And I'm here to beat you up about it. I'm not here to hurt you about it. I'm not here to give you some sort of judgmental type of advice. I'm here to just relate to you. I'm here to just say, listen, I'm here for you. I'm going to help you through this because I know full well that your irresponsibility is going to continue to grow. It's going to continue to hurt your family, your friends. Why? Because I saw that happen in my life. Or I saw it going in that direction of my life before somebody stepped in and cut it off. It's that simple. We have to be willing to say something. We have to be willing to step up and do something when someone is doing the irresponsible thing around us. Because like we've said since the beginning, it's not just irresponsibility affecting them. It's irresponsibility affecting all of us. I mean, imagine with me for just a second what it would look like in your family if the husband and the wife could relate to one another, could just be vulnerable with one another and say, listen, I'm willing to listen to you. I'm willing to communicate with you. I'm willing to get it right with you. I'm willing to help you. And the wife said the same thing. Imagine if that extended to the extended family and then out into the community and then even in the church itself. Imagine the difference if we were all looking to restore one another. If we were all looking to help one another get back to where they're supposed to be, which is right before God, responsible again. Imagine. And you wonder why the world looks at the church and laughs. It's because the church couldn't care less about themselves most of the time. That we don't have the courage and the confidence to stand up and say something to someone that we love, much less somebody that we don't even know. So guys, what do? We say something. Because you see, guys, I'm telling you right now, saying something has power. It has drive. It has results that are positive. And I know that because it happened to me. When I was a junior in high school, I was on the receiving end of some advice, some good, whole, loving, in-your-face advice. I had a friend of mine who cared about me a lot. We'd known each other for 3 or 4 years at this point, and I was struggling to find my identity like every other high school student. And what I would do is I would hang out with my baseball crew, guys I played baseball in high school with, and I would act a certain way around them. And then I would also hang out with people in my neighborhood, and I would act around certain ways around them and old friends from old neighborhoods before I moved. And then I would go to church, and I would act a certain way around my church folk friends. And what was funny is that the friend that confronted me, that came up to me and talked to me, she kind of had an opportunity to hang out with me in all three settings. And one thing stood out in her mind. I'm a different guy in all three environments. Like, I'm not taking myself seriously. Like, I have no identity. Like, I'm playing games with my friends. Like, I have no real relationships. Like, eventually, I don't know who I would be. And I was playing this multiple personality type game. And it was really driving her crazy. It was really driving my other friends crazy. It was making the friends across the groups wonder, what's Eddie doing? Why is he saying things around us, talking like he's a sailor, saying things like this guy, talking like he has no sense, but then he gets around his church folks, and all of a sudden, it's all good words. It's all good heart. And she said, listen, I care about you. We all love you. We want you to be better. We want you to be who you're supposed to be, who God created you to be. We want you just to be you. Will you quit playing games? Will you quit with this personality you messed up? Will you just start being you? And then I thought to myself, as she said these things, man, she's right. She's right. And then I began to think, golly, she cared enough about me to come talk to me? She cared enough about me to say something to me? She cared enough about me to not let the fear of not knowing what to say or how to say it affect the fact that she's going to say something? She just flat out said it. Listen, you're not being you. Just be you. And guys, the coolest part about that story is the fact that 8 years later, she became my wife. That 8 years later, she became someone that was going to spend the rest of her life with me. That when I was a junior in high school, I wasn't me. But as I continued to become more responsible and be me and do the things I needed to be because of the stuff that she was saying to me, the responsibility she was expressing and conveying toward me, I was able to be who I was created to be. So guys, maybe there's somebody in the room that you just need to talk to. Maybe there's somebody in the room you just need to say something to. Maybe there's somebody that you're thinking about outside the room, your family, your friends, whatever, coworker, boss, somebody you really keep deep down care about and love, that you got to say something to them. Are you going to say it? Are you going to get before God, get your mind right, get your heart right? Are you going to say it? And guys, maybe there's you're the one in the room like I was, where you need somebody just to come talk to you, where you're just dealing with the responsibility or not dealing with your responsibility, where you have a blind spot that you can't see and you're just begging and hoping and praying somebody says something soon. Because guys, we can't see most of the time our own irresponsibility. And guys, we need someone to step up and say something to us. Love us enough, care about us enough to help us change. Guys, that's taking responsibility for your life. That's helping other people take responsibility for their life. Being willing to say something. The important things. The devastatingly irresponsible things. Understanding that, hey, I've got nothing to lose. It's all out of love. It's all from humility. It's not about me. It's about them. I just want to help them. And guys, as we pray together, I want you guys to think, who's that guy? Who's that girl that I need to go to? Or is it me? Am I the one, after 3 weeks, still living irresponsibly, still thinking my whole life is about me? And I'm just going to do whatever I want, whenever I want. I'm not going to assume the responsibility that I've been given. And I'm not going to be who I was created to be. Because guys, we have to take responsibility for our lives. It's what we were created to do. Let's pray. God, I just know it's not easy. God, it's not easy being in a position where you have someone close to you who's just not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know it. Maybe folks close know it. And God, I pray for those that are sitting here that are struggling with that, that they're doing all they can to do the right thing in life, and yet they've got somebody that's just struggling just to keep it together. God, I pray that they will have the courage to say something, to come alongside them and help restore them, to not make them feel uncomfortable, to not fake make them feel awkward to the point of coming off as judgmental, but God, that they would restore them, that would lace all of what they're saying with grace and with love. And God, if there's those in the room that need to be talked to, may they be receptive to the words that are going to come from someone who does love them, who does care for them. God, the ultimate goal for you with the church is restoration. You want us to be restored. You want us to be in a right, straight line relationship with you. You want us to put your son Jesus first. You want us to let everything else fall into place after that. You want us to take responsibility for our life, God. I pray that we will both be on the giving and receiving end of helping others. God, that's my prayer today. That's what I ask of you. It's in your son's name that I pray. Amen.